quiet, please.
Buck Benny, the two-fisted, quick-triggered marksman who shoots from the hip and never misses.
Well, Jello again. Finally lost the beard, so good job there. Anyway, we are on to, because it's Halloween week, and so I thought I would play this. This is considered by many to be the scariest episode of old-time radio ever created. I think as we talk about it, you're going to realize that we don't agree with that, but certainly is interesting episode the way it's done. This is from the series Quiet Please, which features every week Ernest Chappell, who is a fine actor and does a great job of presenting. You wouldn't think that one person could hold your attention every week, and yet he does. And this episode, he does a nice job. The writing is always really quite good on this series, and this episode is called The Forble Board, and I guess I'll let Bob give us a quick summary sort of the episode. Let's not give away the end though or anything, Bob. Let's just kind of go with the general piece of the episode, so go ahead.
Like I did for the last one.
We learn and we move on.
Some of us. Yes, The Forble Board. Good lesson in how to drill for oil.
Yes.
Basically, this takes place. A bunch of oil drillers out in the what seems like it's the desert, digging down, and they're bringing up things. They're doing what they call coring, which means they're bringing samples up from down below. And let's just say they bring us some things they weren't expecting.
That sounds good. I'll go. Yeah, that's great. Let's switch over to Matt. Matt, what are your kind of takeaways from the episode without giving too much away at the end or anything?
Well, a couple things. I was not familiar with the series at all, and so I've read a little bit about it. And I'm really interested in it. It's a very apparently well-regarded writer, and I enjoyed the actor as well. So I'm kind of interested in digging a little deeper into the series, just because it seems to be pretty highly regarded as a kind of horror genre series, which I haven't been too intrigued by, but it sounds like it's more I don't know, kind of that almost science fiction side of horror a lot of the time. And so some of the episode descriptions I was looking at seemed like it would be a pretty entertaining series to dig into a little bit. This particular episode, I enjoyed quite a lot. I don't feel like it was the scare. I mean, as far as old time radio, I haven't really ever been scared by old time radio. So maybe it did have a good little creepy vibe to the twist.
I would agree.
But not like an outright terror kind of thing. It just depends on, one, the context of this was from the 1940s. So that's, you know, a little bit, it's a different time. It's a different, you know, kind of context of what people were creeped out or afraid of or what have you.
Well, let me jump in for just a second, Jim. Jim. this will be an ongoing arc as well as will Buck ever get Matt's name right? I don't know. Anyway, I'm going to jump in and just say, because I was just thinking about this. If you have kids, because some people listen with their kids to my podcasts, and that's fantastic. Normally, I will say, boy, if I had a kid that was younger than 12, I would probably listen to this show, and then you decide whether you think your child would be bothered by this or not. I do think if I heard this as an 8-year-old or a 7-year-old, I could easily see myself have nightmares for weeks after this, perhaps. So yeah, it for us old guys, it's like, okay, it's a little creepy. But yeah, for a younger person, I would think it would be a lot creepier. So just throwing out that kind of warning to you about this episode. I do like the fact that Matt, not Jim, said that he would maybe like us to present more episodes of this series, because it does have science fiction elements to it. There's a lot of good reasons to present it. The only downside is so many of these episodes sound horrendous, that just the quality of it. This episode used to sound pretty bad, but it's such a popular episode that so many people have spent time cleaning it up. This is the cleanest version of it I've ever heard, that really it doesn't distract at all. I don't remember anything really in this episode that made you go, oh, I wish they would have removed that, those clicks or that pops or whatever. It pretty clean. And that I've never heard it this clean. I presented it a few different times. If you go back and you were listening to my first presentation of it, it was pretty horrendous to try and listen to the show through all the garbage that was on top of it. But whoever cleaned this did a really nice job. I'll let Matt keep. If Matt, did you have anything else to share on that, or do you want me to throw it over to Bob?
No, I think Bob mentioned one of the things that did jump out is the lesson in oil drilling that you get listening to this episode. I thought it was a little bit funny how much of the short, 20 whatever minutes long, 30 minutes this show is, that how much of not the majority by far, but they spent a lot of time talking about how to pull the drill bit out of the ground. Up to when they were explaining the Vorpal board, they just kept going on and on and on.
Yeah. Well, and to me, because I didn't know how that all works, I thought that was some of the most interesting stuff in the episode. But it is just explanation. It is not where you usually spend half a show on explaining things. And this does. It spends a huge amount, like you're saying, of the time. Probably a third of the show is explaining things that you kind of need to know for the rest of the episode in more depth than
I mean, if you had just said, if you've ever seen an oil rig, that board that's that platform about halfway up, that's the Vorpal board. Oh, okay. So it's kind of high up. You wouldn't want to fall off it.
Agreed. And that is exactly
something could be up there, and I might see something up there, but not be able to identify it. Okay, I get it. Thanks. But the whole thing about you take this part out, and then you yard this stuff, and then you do this, and then you take that and hook it to this, and then like, okay, dude. Like, I felt like I was listening to. It did give the, and if this was the vibe they were going for, good, they nailed it. But I almost got the vibe of like an old dude getting distracted partway through telling a story, which it is a, kind of a first person narrator. So maybe it was supposed to be an old dude telling a story. I don't know. He didn't play himself as a little old man, but I mean, it kind of reminds you of your grandpa telling you a story about the job he used to do, and then totally getting distracted on the technical details of the job and forgetting to tell you the, like, oh yeah, where was I? I was telling you about the time we did this.
Agreed. Bob, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think they could have shortened that, but I didn't really, it was kind of quirky, so I kind of liked it in a way, just because it was kind of interesting. I don't think I ever would have looked up anything about oil drilling rigs. So that, I think when that ad spiked, it was interesting to have that part. I did like the voice actor. I think he's really good. Like you, kind of my, the thought I had is like me and you back when we used to listen to Alfred Hitchcock on your like record.
Yeah.
The part where he would say, are the lights off? We'd always say no. And then he'd go, good. That's kind of what this episode reminded me of that for some reason. Yeah, in terms of being scary, yeah, I wasn't certainly not scared. I didn't pee my pants or anything. So yeah, it was entertaining, but I wasn't, I don't know why they would call it the scariest episode ever.
Yeah, that's what always struck me. I mean, I could see it being a really interesting episode or a unique episode, one that people should listen to, but I describe it as the scariest ever, not so much. but there it is. And I hope you all enjoy it in this great quality sound that we have. And I think I go along with my friend, not Jim, who is Matt, in saying that we should look through and maybe start presenting more of these, certainly when we don't have X minus ones and Dimension X's to present. This would be a good series to go through if I can find a little better sounding episodes and things that I previously found, which hopefully if they've fixed this one, they've fixed other ones too. So, which would be lovely. So without further ado, here is the Forable Board from the amazing Quiet Please with Ernest Chappell as your main actor and narrator. Enjoy. Good job, gentlemen. Made it through everything.
All right.
Except for it says it's still recording. I said stop.
Quiet, please. Mutual Broadcasting System presents Quiet Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet Please for tonight is called The Thing on the Forable Board. Me, I'm a roughneck. Well, I was a roughneck, 20 years ago, a little too old, too slow now. Besides, I got a dollar now. I don't have to be a roughneck, you see. Married, got a nice home. Have to meet my wife. Hey, Mike. Her name's Maxine, but she likes to be called Mike. Mike! I guess she's busy out in the kitchen someplace. Besides, she doesn't hear very well. Shame, too. She's so pretty and everything. Well, you'll meet her. Sit down. I was saying I was a roughneck. Well, no, that doesn't mean exactly what you think it means. A roughneck is an oil field worker, specifically a guy in a drilling crew. Call them roughnecks like you call a section hand on the railroad a gandy dancer, a garage hand a grease monkey. Same time you work around a drilling crew for a while, you're going to be a roughneck in every sense of the word, boy. A derrick floor or a forble board's no place for a guy with a bow tie. Because... yeah, when you have to fool around with drilling holes that go farther down the ground than it is from the top of Pike's Peak down to sea level. Yeah, sure they do. By the time I was a roughneck, we'd got this one well down to 7,313 feet. That was a record. But last May, Pure Oil brought one in out in the Trona Valley in Wyoming at 14,309 feet. That, friend, is almost 3 miles. Quite a hole, that, huh? Sure, I don't think there's an oil man in the world that don't wonder one time or another what's down there, besides rock and oil and gas. Oil that's made out of trees that died 20 million years ago. Oil that's made out of dinosaur bones. Oil that's maybe made out of the flesh and blood of men, maybe, that beat each other to death with a stone axe, ate saber-toothed tiger for lunch. Hey, get to wondering. You look at the cores that come up from way down there, and sometimes there's little shells, trilobites mostly, that was alive when Manhattan Island, where New York is, was under half a mile of ice. We found something once, me and Billy Grunewald, and something found us. I'll tell you about it. We were down to around 5,400 feet. We'd set casing. We began to get water, so we had to stop drilling and cement off. Well, you see, when water begins to seep in the hole, you pull your drill pipe, then you let down a cementing shoe inside the casing, and you plug up the bottom of the hole, casing and all, with quick hardening waterproof cement. Then when it's hard, you drill through the cement and go on down, and the cement outside the casing at the bottom keeps the water out. Well, we had the drill pipe all pulled and cracked. The cement was setting, see? So we was shut down, waiting for it to harden. We'd been coring just before. Well, you see, a core drill is hollow, and as the bit digs down, it stuffs the drillings up inside it, so when you pull it out, you got a sample of the kind of stuff you're going through. And a geologist can tell a lot from that. So there's nobody around the rig except me that night. The rest of the crew's gone into town. I was toasting some pork chops over the forge for myself, but I heard a car pulling up. Look out, it's Billy Grunewald, the geologist, and I give him a hello. Hi, Billy, come and have a pork chop.
Hi, Porky. Where's everybody?
Yeah, all went to town. I'm the whole crew.
You know, I had three blowouts between here and Oxnard.
Yeah, I wondered where you was. Ted said you'd be in here about three.
Yeah, I would have been, except for my tough luck. Oh, I'm dead.
Yeah, hungry?
Starved.
Yeah, I got seven pork chops. And bread. And some coffee, kind of.
Swell. Yeah, I got a bottle in the car.
We're going to have a banquet.
Hey, where's that core? That's what I came up here to look at.
Yeah, back there on the bench. Look at it after supper.
Hey.
What?
Didn't you say you were all alone here? I thought I heard somebody talking.
Yeah. I don't see anybody. We'll keep an eye on that pork chop. You won't have any supper.
Yeah, I'm watching it.
Yeah, let me put the coffee on. Like so.
When did you finish cementing?
This morning. Last tower only made about 10 feet of hole, so Ted shut down before we get flooded out of house and home.
Funny about that water.
How?
Oughtn't to be any at that level, according to my figuring.
Well, there is.
Is it salt?
Sure, right out of the bottom of the ocean.
That's funny. Well, maybe I'll be able to tell something from the core. Yeah, I hope so. The last core I looked at, I'd have sworn we were getting into shale.
Ain't seen none yet from the cuttings.
That's funny.
Here, your pork chop's done. Yeah, take some bread.
Yeah, thanks. Oh, man.
Good, huh? Yeah, put on another. I had two already before you come.
Yeah, much obliged. Yeah, you know, you never can tell what's down there. You get it all mapped and plotted out, all the strata. And all you know is what comes out of the hole.
Yeah, I'd like to go down there sometime if I was little enough.
Never get you down a hole.
Yeah, you'd fit. You're skinny.
I'll stay up here and look at the cores, Bud. Where is that one?
Behind you. Over there.
Well, I'll have a look at it.
Why don't you wait till you finish your supper?
I'm just going to look at it. Put on another pork chop for me.
Okay.
Well, I wish those screech owls would be...
What's the matter?
Hey, wait a minute, Porky.
Well, why do you...
Listen.
What's eating you?
You know, I'd have sworn there's somebody up there in that forble board.
Ah, you're crazy. There's nobody up there.
Getting against those stands of drill pipe.
Ah, they're just rack crooked. One of them slipped. Come on back and eat your pork chop.
Yeah, I guess so. Only I...
What you so jittery about, Billy? Come on, eat your sandwich. Here.
Yeah, well, thanks, Porky. I don't know. I'm just naturally that way, I guess. I'm always scared of the dark. Doggone it, I hate to be a baby, but I can't help it.
Scared of the dark? Honest?
Stupid, ain't it?
Oh, I don't know. Everybody's scared of something. Me? Spiders scare the tar out of me. Black widows. Oh. I know how you feel, Billy.
There another light over here?
Yeah. Here.
That's better. Hey, listen, Porky. Go out to the car and look in the left-hand door pocket and bring back that bottle, will you? That's what I need.
Okay, kid. Okay. So I picked up a flashlight. I turned around and went outside. I found the car. And I got the bottle. And the floor of the derrick was all lit up. And when I saw a beam of light suddenly flash up toward the forble board, I laughed. Billy Grunewald and his ideas. Sure, I looked up. There wasn't a darn thing up there, except the drill pipe racked against the fingerboard. Oh, this forble board. Well, you've seen oil derricks or pictures of them. You know that little platform that runs around the outside of the derrick about halfway up? Well, that's the forble board. Well, you see, drill pipe comes in lengths, and you handle them with several lengths screwed together so as to save time getting them in and out of the hole. Two lengths is a double, three is a thribble, four is a fourble. When you pull a pipe, you hoist it up inside the derrick of the traveling block, which moves up and down from the crown block at the top of the derrick. Then when a forbola pipe is pulled out, it's held in the rotary table. You break the joint with tongs, like a great big Stilson wrench, you see. Snub a cable that's fastened to the handle over the cat head on the draw works, and that breaks the joint. Then you hold the tongs on the pipe, give the rotary table a few turns to unscrew it. You heist away with the traveling block and swing it over against the fingerboard, lean it against the derrick. The guy up on the forbola board takes off the traveling block. You do it all over again, and you got all the pipe out, you see? Well, there wasn't anybody up on the forbola board, except a screech owl, and it flew away. So Billy turned his light off, and I come on inside. And just as I come up the steps, he let out a yell.
Yay!
What's the matter? What's the matter, Billy?
Hey, come here. Look here.
Well, what's it? Look, Porky. My... Where did you find that?
Now, listen, Porky, I give you my word. That was embedded in the core.
Why, it couldn't be.
I tell you, it was. Look where I dug it out. You know what? That rock there comes from a mile underground. And it's been a mile underground for a million years. And look at this.
And I did look. And what he was holding was a gold ring. And it was all carved and filigreed just like jewelry. And there wasn't any kidding about it. It was real. Now, wait a minute. Hang on. I ain't done. I poked at the core of rock that looked like a kind of petrified salami or something. And then it was my turn to pretty near jump out of my pants. Because right alongside the place where Billy dug out the ring, there was a mud-covered, but very unmistakable, finger. I picked it up, and it was cold, and it was heavy. And it was solid rock. At least it felt like solid rock. And I looked at Billy, and Billy looked at me. He started to rub the mud off this here stone finger. And as he rubbed it, it began to disappear. No, he could still feel it, he said, but when the mud was gone, neither one of us could see it. And he dropped it to the derrick floor. It went clunk, and we couldn't find it any place. So you know what we've done. Well, we took that bottle and we took and finished it, Billy and me. We finished it in one slug of peace, and it was a full pint of bathtub gin. It tasted just like so much well water to me. And then we sat down on the derrick floor and we looked at each other. We didn't say a word. My eyes got heavier and heavier. The last thing I remember was I heard some kind of noise that seemed to be coming up from down the forbola board 80 feet above us. I shut my eyes a minute. I guess I went to sleep. And I had awful dreams. Black Widow. Spiders crawling all over me with gold rings on their legs. Things I could hear but I couldn't see up on the forbola board. Billy Grunewald climbing up the ladder outside the derrick in the moonlight. Faces looking at me, and I couldn't figure out who they were. Then I was waked up by a horrible scream. The crash alongside me that shook the whole derrick. I opened my eyes to see Billy Grunewald lying on the floor 2 feet away with a broken neck. With a broken neck and his left hand. Well, he put the gold ring on the little finger of his left hand, and the way his arms were spread out, his left little finger and the ring were gone. Friend, I got out of there. I run down to where Billy had left his car, and I got in. I stepped on the starter, and I couldn't get it to go, and then I remembered after I'm pretty near run down the battery that Billy had taken a key. I wasn't going up there and go through a dead man's clothes to get it. So I sat there in the car and shivered all by myself till daylight. And then Ted and the crew came. Afterwards, a state cop and everybody in the world was asking me questions.
Did you and Billy have a fight, Porky?
I told you we didn't, Ted.
But you had been drinking.
We only had that little pint, Ted.
Well, what was he doing up on the Fulbo board?
Did you threaten him, and did he run up there to get away from
Listen,
you?
Listen, cop, don't be a chump. Billy Grunewald and I were good friends.
Then why'd you push him off the Fulbo board?
I didn't, I tell you. I wasn't up there.
Well, what did he go up there for?
I don't know. I was asleep.
How do you know he was up there?
I didn't say he was. You said so. Besides, how would he break his neck if he didn't fall from way up there?
Well, look, officer. I think it was just another accident. I mean, we haven't got anything on Porky, and personally, I don't believe he did it.
Well, so. It's mighty mysterious.
So it is. But we got work to do. Now, how about it? That cement's hard down there, and I want to start drilling again, and I'm short-handed. Will you let Porky stay here till I run in my pipe again, and, well, then you can take him and ask him questions till you're blue in the face.
Well,
I... Okay. Let's get rolling. You got steam up, Happy?
I'm a little fat.
All right. Porky, you go up on the formal board.
What? Not me, Ted.
Oh, don't be such a boob. There's nobody up there to shove you overboard. Yeah, you can put a safety line around you if you want to. And besides, you're getting paid to do what you're told. I've lost too much time already. Come on, get going.
Okay, I go up on the Fulbo board. And you can bet I took a good gander around before I did anything else. Now I couldn't see a thing. So I signaled to the driller to let down the traveling block, and he did. Came sailing down from up above. I was just reaching for it to pick up the first Fulbo of drill pipe. Gave a big jerk and the cable broke. It dropped and nearly pulled me off the Fulbo board. And it landed right on top of Ted. And if you have any idea what a guy looks like after 2 tons of metal land on him from 80 feet up, yeah, you keep your ideas to yourself. Well, that was enough. 2 accidents in a row. The whole crew quit. They wasn't going to wait for a third. And it was Ted's money that was paying off. There wasn't any more, and as far as I know, the abandoned Derek is still there. And that was 20 years ago. Oh, I forgot to tell you something. That traveling block was right in front of my face when it broke loose. It was hanging by steel cable, 3/4-inch steel cable. And I saw that cable break right before my eyes. It looked just like a piece of string when you snap it between your fingers. I could almost see the fingers. You know what? There was something up there on the Fulbo board with me. And so a couple of days later, I came back. I don't know if there's anything in the world as desolate, as dismal, as dead-looking as an abandoned oil well rig. There it stands like a skeleton off on a deserted side road in the bare yellow hills surrounding it. And it's the deadest thing you ever saw. I sat in my car for a long time looking at it. Everything was just the way we'd left it. I looked in at the floor. The smashed traveling block was there alongside the rotary table. There was a little mutter of steam from the boiler. That was all. Then I heard a tinkle of something as it hit the ground alongside me. I looked around. There wasn't a soul in sight. But at my feet was the gold ring that Billy Grunewald and I had found in the core of rock that came from a mile underground and from a million years ago in time. And I heard a little sound. The sound of a kid crying. And there wasn't any kid up there. And I heard it again, and it came from above my head, and I took out my revolver. I loaded it carefully. I started up the ladder to the Fulbo board. No, there wasn't anything up there, nothing I could see. But there was a voice crying. The voice of a little kid. And Then there was a movement behind the rack of drill pipes, and I saw the pipe move, and I yelled, "Come out of there, whoever you are! Come out or I'll start shooting!" And the stand of pipe shivered, and I thought, what can it be that can handle that heavy pipe like Jack Straw's? And then there was a crash. The whole stand of pipe fell over, and I just got out of the way in time. And I was alone on the foible board with the thing. But I couldn't see it. I felt the platform tremble under my feet again as something moved toward me. I fired two or three shots. And nothing happened. I started backwards. I knew it was following me because I could hear it meowing like a cat. My feet tripped over something. I saw it was a big can of red lead that somebody had left up there. Without thinking, I picked it up and I threw it at the sound and it splashed. And there it was. And I wish... The face of a little girl, frightened, crying with hunger and terror. Hands like a human being and a finger missing from the left hand. And a body. I'll not tell you about that. I told you how I'm scared of spiders. But I knew where it came from. It had come from the bowels of the earth, come riding up on the drill pipe as we yanked it out of the well. Come to an alien world and was lost. It stood there dripping with red paint, blood red from head to foot like some horrible dream. And it put its hand on my arm. Its hand was stone. Living, moving stone. And it looked into my eyes and mewed like a lost kitten. Twenty years ago, I discovered many things about it, what it used for food, that it was deaf, that it was invisible and couldn't see people when it was invisible, that if you sprayed it with mud or paint, or grease paint, makeup, then it could see people. And believe me, I didn't want to see its body. I can see that in my nightmares. But its face, I can't help wanting to see that pathetic little girl face. I'm afraid maybe I've fallen. But it's very beautiful. And when it's well made up, it's... But making it up, rubbing grease paint on a stone face that looks at you and smiles and it makes sounds like a lost kitten yet. I can disguise the body in long dresses. She can't hear very well. And when she's hungry, I have to stay out of her way. I found out what she likes to eat, remember? No, sit still. Sit still, do. Sit still or I'll have to shoot you. I want you to meet my wife. Or rather, my wife wants to meet you. Mike. Mike. There she is. Come on in, dear. The title of tonight's Quiet Please story is The Thing on the Foible Board. It was written and directed by Willis Cooper and featured Ernest Chappell. And Dan Sutter played Billy Grunewald. Pat O'Malley was Ted. And Cecil Roy was also a member of the cast. As usual, music for Quiet Please is played by Albert Berman. Sound? Sound by our good friend Albert April. Now for a word about next week, here is our writer-director, Willis Cooper.
Well, I'm reasonably sure that all the characters in tonight's stories were completely fictional. At least I, for one, hope so. Next week, the story is called Presto Change-O, I'm sure.
And so, until next week at the same time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chappell. This program was heard in Canada through the facilities of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.